to go. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757, and emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Signature support from the Mayor President's Office of East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Again, 877-217-5757, and we're waiting for Troy Carter, the congressman who represents Greater New Orleans, who for the last few cycles has represented North Baton Rouge as well, and there has been congressional redistricting. And it affects Garrett Graves the most, but also Troy Carter. His district is now just over 50% African-American. Now, New Orleans, of course, is a different city, and there are some white Democrats left in New Orleans, more than in any other city in America, any other city in Louisiana. But still, he could potentially face a strong challenge, and we'll see what happens. Qualifying is in 2 months, a little less than 2 months. July 19th, I believe, is the start. So Troy Carter, he benefited from having a district that was largely African-American, and he still has that, but not by much. Garrett Graves, on the other hand, as we know, the congressman who's represented the Baton Rouge area for a decade, at least part of Baton Rouge. He never represented North Baton Rouge. In Richard District, Richard Baker's old district, and by the way, Baker was elected over and over. He served 22 years on Capitol Hill, a Republican. He had North Baton Rouge in his district. But now Garrett Graves faces the prospect of running, if he runs in the 6th District, against Cleo Fields in a newly configured district that is 54% African American. And Robin Dow, our fine producer, tells me that Troy Anthony Carter Sr. is with us, former state House member, former state senator, and former city council member. He has been a stalwart in New Orleans politics for a generation. That's his hometown, born there, went to O. Perry Walker and Xavier University. Also has advanced degrees from Harvard and Carnegie Mellon. And good morning to you, Congressman Carter.
Good morning, Jim. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. It's great to hear your voice, and you're a guy.
Great to hear your voice, and so happy that after many attempts, we have finally connected, and I'm honored to be with you.
Well, and the feeling is mutual, but we're going to get to redistricting. I would like to get a little housekeeping out of the way, though, and we have lamented the fact that Congress has passed extremely few bills over the last year in particular. But you have been involved in things, of course, that are near and dear to your constituents and by extension to the state at large. And one of those is this issue regarding feeding children food stamps in the summertime. How's that one going?
You know, I'm pleased to report that we have success. One of those rare moments that we were able to reverse the decision and do what I believe is the right thing in common sense, an opportunity to accept $71.1 million in federal aid to provide resources during the summer months, summer EBT dollars, that's directly loaded on the recipient's EBT card so that mother, grandmother, father, guardian can go to the grocery store during the summer months when kids are out of school. We know that in many cases, little children, black, white, and other, Republican, Democrat, and other throughout the entire state, oftentimes the only hot meal they get or the nutritious meal they get is that meal that they get in school. Well, when there's no summer school, during the summer, there's no meal. So the thought behind this is to provide opportunities to keep our children healthy because we know the intersection between mental health and physical health is good nutrition. So I will tell you my initial conversation with the governor was that he was going to decline the dollars because he had a different plan. I went to the Capitol, sat with the governor in the mansion and implored of him to reconsider his position. At that time, he was not willing to do that. I spoke then with other members of the legislature, namely and most specifically, Jason Williams, not Jason Williams, Jason Hughes, State Representative Jason Hughes from Eastern New Orleans, who told me then that he would not give up. He was going to continue to work with leadership, and he did just that. He continued to work with leadership in the legislature and the governor's office. He asked me to continue to keep the dollars in a holding pattern as long as I could. USDA said that that was not going to be possible. I told him it had to be possible. We continued to press. Jason Hughes, through his efforts, was successful in getting to Speaker Philip DeValle and to President of the Senate, Cameron Henry, both Republicans. And along came another champion, and that is Jack McFarland, who's chairman of the Appropriations Committee, along with Delisha Boyd and members of the New Orleans City Council and other legislators. We combined forces in a very bipartisan way to say, listen, these are children. And as a result of that, we're able to reverse the action. The Appropriations Committee appropriated the $3.5 million that was required to administer the $71 million. Of course, who would not take $71 million for $3 million all day long, right? It's a good deal. It's all not only a good deal for our young people, obviously the most important, but it's also good for the economy. Because people take those EBT cards, and what do? They go to the grocery store. They go to our local marts in our neighborhoods and our communities that employ people, that collect sales taxes, that enrich our economy. So it's really a win-win scenario. So kudos to all involved that in a very bipartisan way we were able to reverse that action and bring resources to our young people in the entire state of Louisiana, which is a win-win. So to all those that helped me get this done, a huge shout out to them, because it could not have been done with one person. It took a real team effort.
877-217-5757. If you'd like to pose a question, you can get Robin to do it, or you can talk with the congressman if we have time, and also send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And we will get to congressional redistricting, but another issue that is the rage right now is AI, artificial intelligence, and you're on the forefront of that. What are you doing?
So we have the ranking member, Benny Thompson, and I have introduced the AI Task Force Act. This bill would establish a task force within CISA to essentially use DHS, Department of Homeland Security, to create a task force to get our arms around what's going on. The critical step now toward managing the impact of cybersecurity. And the cybersecurity landscape, we know that it's moving fast. While we know, you know, most of us know that AI is not new. It's been used for a very long time. But now it's available to almost anyone that has a laptop, an iPhone, a cell phone. So it's universally used now. And we have to now learn, Jim, from what we didn't learn during the onset of social media, the pluses, the minuses, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we know that they all exist. For as good as social media has been, we know that it also has had some significant dangers, particularly with our young people. And now we have to not recreate the wheel. We have to be smart in how we address and deal with the nuances associated with AI for our national security, for our domestic security, for our banking institutions, to our schools, our universities. It is a major, major undertaking. And from a national security standpoint, you know, we have to make sure that the task force enhances the safe and secure design, that we're doing this right and that we're paying attention to nefarious actors and those that would have, you know, ill thoughts and ill actions for our country, for our institutions, for our individuals. So the CISA Securing A1 Task Force Act will strengthen America's cybersecurity framework, securing and safeguarding against emerging threats, ensuring that responsible technologies are allowed to go forward while ones that are not responsible, those that have ill actions, those are anti-American, those that would challenge, rather it's our actions at the border or our elections. It's the new frontier that's not so new. But we have to not wait until Pandora's box is completely opened. We've got to tamp it down and make sure that we manage it. And that's the effort of the bill in its stages. And we're hopeful that while Congressman Thompson and I are the lead authors, I'm hopeful and I'm working to encourage other members of Homeland Security and beyond on the other side of the aisle to join me in this effort, because I think we all agree and we work in great harmony in Homeland Security on these.
All right, we do have to take a short pause of 89.3 seconds in Baton Rouge and 89.9 in New Orleans. Back with more Talk Louisiana after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WWNO New Orleans and WRKF Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Congressman Troy Carter, 2nd District Congressman, and our time is short, and certainly we want to talk congressional redistricting with him, and he represents the 2nd District, which up until very recently sprawled from New Orleans all the way up to North Baton Rouge, and now he has a new district. It's still a majority black district, albeit very, very tight as far as that majority. Are you satisfied with the new district, Congressman?
Listen, I've said all along that I would be willing to take a haircut in my district in order to ensure that the maps reflected the true population of Louisiana. And so, yes, I'm fine to have the map reflect the ebbs and flows in population of Louisiana, and I think everyone should be. This is not a mystery science. It's a very exact science. Every 10 years, we have reapportionment to account for the ebbs and flows and the differences that take place in population growth and the shifts thereof. So, yeah, I don't understand, quite frankly, why. I guess I do understand. It's partisan, and it shouldn't be, because reapportionment isn't partisan. It's math, and I've said all along, math is math, and the numbers reflect what they are. That's why we do census counts. That's why we do reapportionment every 10 years to take account for these things. So, you know, I'm happy that the Supreme Court got it right in recognizing that these maps are in fact constitutional, and they reflect the map and the math of Louisiana.
Mike Wolf in Old Goodwood in Baton Rouge writes, why can't we have more community-based districts, which would mean, in his view, one for New Orleans, one for Baton Rouge? Would we as a state be able to accomplish the same goal of having two minority districts if we did that?
Well, because these maps require numbers, and they require, it's set by the Constitution, by the standard of population. New Orleans alone would not have enough population to secure a map. And these are determined nationwide, not just for Louisiana, but for all 50 states.
All right. Let's go to Stuart in Baton Rouge, who's been waiting the longest. Stuart, we do ask you to be very brief, though. You're on with Congressman Carter. Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Stuart. How are you? Jim, Congressman Carter, and the audience. Good morning, Congressman. Needless to say, it's a pleasure. Thank you. Congressman, related to public education in the United States, with this nation having slipped in status, is there anything Congress can do? I'm sure there's something they can do to strengthen discipline in our public school landscape and make parents much more accountable.
All right. That's a question that is important. It's really not on topic with congressional redistricting, but that's okay. I'm sure the congressman has some thoughts. Congressman Carter?
I'm happy to answer your question. And being the son of a lifetime school teacher who spent 40 years in the classroom, and I often heard her complain of the disciplinary issues that made it more of a challenge to teach our young people. So yes, Congress can and will and has and will continue to work with local and state governments to enhance the classroom experience and to make sure that we're preparing our children not only academically, but to behave and to take advantage of the opportunity to be in the classroom to learn and not to be disruptive. So we've had a number of measures through the chairman of our education, ranking member rather, Education and Labor, Congressman Bobby Scott, that addresses those issues that you mentioned. I'm happy to share more information with you.
Jim on I-12, please be brief, Jim. You're on.
Good morning, Congressman Carter. I'd like to thank you for everything that you've done in Congress. Jim, you did kind of erroneously say that Congress hasn't done a lot, but they did for the first 2 years of Joe Biden's presidency, and that includes the infrastructure bill, which has brought jobs and economic benefits to this state.
All right. That has been a big boon for Louisiana, and you're one of only two members of our delegation to vote for it, Congressman.
Yeah, and Jim, thanks for bringing that out, because while this last year has not been what we'd hoped it'd be, and largely because our friends on the other aisle, on the other side of the aisle, and I don't mean this with any disrespect, have not been able to quite get along within their own conference, and that has made it difficult. As you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene and others have attacked Speaker Johnson, and that's within the Republican conference, and that's caused the inability for us to move as many measures forward as we did in the previous Congress, where we passed the Inflation Reduction Act, where we passed the bipartisan infrastructure, where we passed the CHIPS and Science Act, you know, where we were able to bring literally millions and millions of dollars to Louisiana to deal with those issues of infrastructure, to deal with those issues of environmental justice, to make sure that we are taking care of our environment and creating an opportunity for coexistence between industry and citizens. So, you know, we put more money into our school systems, more money into infrastructure. This infrastructure bill, which has been talked about for Congresses and Congresses, presidents and presidents, have brought about more money than has ever been done for our infrastructure since the interstate system. Let that sink in. That's a big deal. And we continue to move forward because our country, our state, our communities, our people are depending on us to advance the ball, not the Republican ball, not the Democrat ball, but the ball for the American people. And I'm proud to say that that's what I wake up every day to try and do.
All right, Melanie in New Orleans asks your thoughts about this dust-up in a committee with AOC and Congresswoman Crockett and Marjorie Taylor Greene. That was something, wasn't it?
It was something, and I will tell you, not picking sides, it's never good. It's never good to see members of Congress have to act out that way. Marjorie Taylor Greene, as we all know, has fashioned herself as a self-styled obstructionist. This isn't the first time that she has verbally accosted a member. It's not the first time that she's bucked the rules in decorum on the, rather it's on the House floor or in committee. And I will tell you, it's never good for the image of the People's House to have members have to engage that way.
Well, as we approach Memorial Day, another listener implores me, and it's a good thing. Your wife is a patriot and has served our country in a substantial way. Tell us more.
I'm very proud. My wife is Anna Carter, who is a proud member of the United States Army and is a brigadier general within the Army, and is just promoted as the commanding general of psychological operations. And she's a 27-year veteran of the Army, and I'm very proud of her. And when people ask, do I salute at home, I say, yes, I do. I take out the trash when I'm told, and every now and then I have to do push-ups when I don't do it fast enough.
There you go. We only have a minute, but please be brief. David in Atlanta, you're on with Congressman Carter.
Congressman, the House won't pass the bipartisan immigration bill by the Senate. And why can't the Republican-controlled House of Representatives draft their own immigration bill?
All right. What about David's concerns about what's going on?
David, thank you very much. You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because We talk about it every day. It's a major issue. We know that we have problems at the border. We know that we have to do something about the border. In a bipartisan way, the Senate had a measure that we were going to bring to the floor. And it's alleged that President Trump said, no, don't give Biden a victory. Let's not pass this now. And I say to the American people, Republican, Democrat, or other, how ridiculous is that? We have a cure, or at least a step in the right direction that we've determined on a bipartisan way we can advance. But because former President Trump doesn't want current President Biden to have a victory, the victory isn't for the president on either side. The victory is for the American people. The victory is for the challenges that we have at the border. And
all right, we do have to roll, and I know the congressman's a busy man. In fact, he interrupted a meeting to be with us. But thank you, Congressman Carter. Hopefully we'll have you back again soon. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, and we're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Friday Politics on WWNO New Orleans and WRKF Baton Rouge. And one of our great contributors from the Capitol is with us as we head down the stretch and are getting ready to finish a regular session of the legislature, the third session since Governor Landry took office. And there is more to come, apparently. But Mandy Landry, State Representative, Great City of New Orleans, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim.
Your view of where we are right now?
Oh, we can't wait until then. We feel like we've been in school for, years without a break. We're getting close. A lot of stuff has been moving real fast. Most items are through the process for the most part, most of the bigger items, except for we're waiting for HB1 and HB2, the budget and capital outlay. I was just noticing yesterday with a colleague, it's been very quiet budget discussions. We haven't heard anything about it in a while. So we're waiting on that. The Constitutional Convention is not looking, it's looking less likely as planned, and we're just trying to finish up.
Well, would that be a good thing or a bad thing if the Constitutional Convention went by the wayside?
I would be thrilled if they forgot about that idea for a long time. The way it was going was just—it was fast, it was rushed. It seemed like there were just certain people that wanted to do it. The process didn't seem like it was well thought out. So perhaps one day, but this is too soon.
Well, Louisiana, as reported in the Advocate and Picayune today by Emily Woodruff, is poised to become the first state to classify two abortion-inducing medications as dangerous controlled substances, penalizing possession of the medications without a valid prescription with 10 years in prison, potentially. The proposed law received final legislative approval yesterday and heads to the desk of Governor Landry, who's expected to sign it. Pregnant women would be exempt from prosecution, but I know you're not a big fan. This Landry has a different position than the other Landry, it appears.
Yeah, this bill is, I have to admit, it's brilliant. The Right to Life, I hate to call them that, extremists, have just been coming up with ideas for years. But this bill puts two medications, in particular one, misoprostol, that is used thousands of times a day for women, for inducing labor, for managing a harmful miscarriage, for postpartum hemorrhaging. This medication, which some people call miso, is used thousands of times a day. It's completely safe. It's been used for decades, but it's also used in elective abortions. And they're putting it as a Schedule IV classified drug, which it is not addictive. But what this does is it makes it that much more difficult to get it and get it fast when you need it. You will still be able to get a prescription for it, but as anyone who's filled a prescription for oxycodone or Ritalin or Valium or anything knows, there's a few extra steps and sometimes there's a delay. And with this medication in particular, pharmacies have already stopped stocking it because of concerns that they'll be, investigated or charged because it is used in abortion. So what this is doing is just making it that much harder for people to access a safe drug. But the intent is to find anyone who may have bought one of these medications online for an elective abortion to really throw the book at them. 1 to 5 years if you're caught with misoprostol, which you can buy safely online through a telehealth appointment.
What if you transport it across state lines? You're going to go to jail for that too? I don't know.
Don't give them any ideas.
Well, Louisiana monitors based on controlled substances, providers, patients, pharmacies, and nearly 300 Louisiana physicians and medical students signed a letter saying it sets a precedent that is a threat to the safe and autonomous practice of medicine in Louisiana that would have a chilling effect on patients and providers. But this apparently didn't resonate with too many lawmakers.
No, it became mostly a partisan issue, especially the bill author and some others just harping on they're still going to be able to get it. Well, we know that's not the point. These are medications that need to be used often very, very quickly before you become septic or the baby's coming fast or you're having issues very fast after you give birth. And I felt like it was very disingenuous, and I felt that a lot of people just heard that information and kind of made themselves feel better and voted for it as they were expected to vote for it without talking to doctors, without talking to many doctors.
The sponsor in the Senate, Thomas Presley of Shreveport, Republican, says the legislation protects women from abortions without their knowledge or consent, and he says that his sister, Catherine, was given an abortion-inducing a drug in her drink by her husband. The pregnancy continued, but the daughter was born 10 weeks early and requires therapy. But is that something that is enough to go for this?
So I'm glad you brought that up. So because what happened, what the author and Louisiana Right to Life did, they manipulated our legislative process. The bill, as it was originally filed, was a result of something that happened to his sister. It was horrible. Her husband, ex-husband, I don't know, was slipping misoprostol, which will induce, will help you have an abortion, I guess you could say, in her water when she was pregnant. I guess he didn't want the child. And she put some cameras up or something, and she realized it was happening. And that original bill increase the sentences on that kind of crime. It was already a crime to do that, but increase the sentences. When the bill, after the bill passed the Senate and came to the House, this bombshell amendment about changing the classification of the drugs was added on. So totally different. So what came to the House floor was totally different than was on the Senate floor. And so while the original bill was helping what was a terrible situation, what the bill is now is completely different and I think abused the process.
Let's start with Miriam in Mandeville for Representative Mandy Landry. Miriam, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I have a daughter of reproductive age. I don't even want her to visit me in Louisiana because she might have a medical emergency and not be able to get first world care. Do you think that there should be a travel advisory for women of reproductive age to not travel to Louisiana?
I mean, that's an interesting point. I've heard that from a lot of people, also people who want their daughters are going away to college, probably not coming back, because the younger ones in particular understand the situation. They're a lot more aware. And I don't know about a travel advisory. I hope we don't get to that point. But I think you're right that people need to know that if something happens, especially if you visit here when you're pregnant, that you might not be able to be treated like you would elsewhere. And those situations can be fatal. So I think you might be onto something we should think about, to be honest.
James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Mandy Landry.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. And hello, Ms. Mandy Landry.
Good morning.
This is all an extension of the most absurd conclusion that this conservative legislature has ever considered, that an embryo is a child. Crazy. Now, we have a possession of an FDA-approved drug, puts you in prison for 10 years. It will be signed by a governor who wants to keep Satan out of our libraries and tells Louisiana residents that if they don't like Louisiana's laws, they can move in a state that's experiencing out-migration. It's all crazy.
All right. There might be a question in there, but James is fired up. But are many people as fired up as James, or is he an aberration?
Well, you know, what I hear in New Orleans, but then also from people like James around the state, is obviously similar to what he said and to what I agree with. It's kind of hard to tell, though, what's going on in the rest of the state, because I often don't think my colleagues are completely representative of their constituents. And I know that because I hear from their constituents all the time. So-and-so doesn't represent me. So-and-so never returns my phone calls. We also know from polling post-Roe and polling the past few years in general that people are a lot more accepting of issues surrounding pregnancy and abortion when you ask specific questions. Like when you ask about rape and incest exception, absolutely everyone's in favor of allowing that exception. Life of the mother, absolutely everyone agrees with that. Start asking about recreational marijuana. You have a lot of people who agree with that. So I think his views are more prevalent in, you know, the areas where we live, that they're not uncommon anymore around the state. And I wish that could get through to some of my colleagues to see that there are people who have those views and that are concerned about what we're doing.
We're on the brink, it appears, of having the Ten Commandments in every public school classroom. Is that good?
Some of the stuff we vote on, I just can't believe it. No. That kind of stuff is not done for the purpose of the Ten Commandments. They're test bills to see how far they can go. And I say they, I don't even mean my colleagues. That bill was introduced around the country in similar bills. There are all these test bills to see what they can do, what they can pass, and how far they can go. So this year it's the Ten Commandments. Next year it's, maybe Christian prayer books, or, you know, never quite getting close to prayer per se, because that's a larger issue. But maybe 5 years from now, maybe back to prayer, maybe back to some more religious education in public schools. It's little by little.
877-217-5757. It's about time for another short break. Robin Dow producing, and Mandy Landry with us on Friday Politics. She'll be with us the last quarter hour as well on WRKF and WWNO. And amid everything else, a Senate bill, which is the top legislative story in the newspaper of record today, would make illegal immigration a state crime. And we'll get Mandy Landry's review of this and much more. Again, 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with more after this quick time out on WWNO and WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WWNO and WRKF. Mandy Landry, State Representative, Great City of New Orleans, is with us, and we'll go to the phones and we'll talk more about legislative matters, and I'm sure some of our listeners have questions about what's percolating at the Capitol. Shelley in Baton Rouge. Shelley, you're on with Representative Landry.
Earlier the gentleman was talking about a mass exodus of people from the state of Louisiana. My fear is that we are also going to have a mass exodus of OBGYNs from the state of Louisiana, and females of reproductive age may find themselves in a searching mode for a decent OBGYN and may have to travel for many miles or even hundreds of miles to find one.
All right, Shelley. It would appear that some of these doctors now have their hands tied when they have to make a tough call in a surgery. That might affect their point of view as to whether they want to practice medicine here. What are your thoughts, Representative Landry?
She's right. It's already started happening since Roe was overturned. Doctors are freaking out. That's the best way one of my colleagues described it. They're freaking out because, you know, as y'all know, and as your caller knows, when there is an emergency in a pregnancy or right after childbirth, it has to be responded to very fast. And so to have to go to like a hospital administrator or a lawyer to say that you need to terminate, or, you know, there's something you need to do that could end with an abortion, which is a medical term, by the way, not just elective abortion, it's also miscarriage. And so I have to go to a lawyer or an administrator. I mean, you don't have time for that. But then the doctor is really worried that he could make a decision. He could make a decision that they could face criminal charges for later. And what we've seen for sure is some are starting to leave. We're having problems attracting medical students and medical residents in this field. And we've seen stories that have been very public about women, one I know very well, having to go to several different emergency rooms when they're clearly miscarrying or clearly bleeding a lot. And they aren't far along enough yet for the hospital doesn't want to take them in because then they have to write miscarriage or abortion on paperwork. And then they're afraid they'll get looked at. So she's absolutely right. This is already affecting women's health care.
Jamie in Covington, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. So I really appreciate Representative Landry's efforts in the legislature. I've been there myself to testify many times to deaf ears, unfortunately. So on the issue of health care and abortion and health care for women, I really put a lot of the blame, and I'm probably going to get a lot of backlash for this, on doctors. And medical associations. The bottom line is, if doctors would go ahead and do what is medically appropriate for women and then go to the court, and then if they get sued, the women aren't going to sue. I mean, because they want the best health care they can get. And if they're in the midst of a pregnancy crisis and it ends up where the pregnancy has to be terminated to save the life of the mother, they're not going to sue.
All right. Thank you, Jamie. But this involves criminal prosecution. So that's a whole different animal, and most people don't want to go to jail. Mandy, she's right, though. Some doctors are going to say, I'm going to do what is right and take my chances. But we all are into self-preservation to some degree.
Yeah. Of course they should be worried. I mean, look at the people trying to hunt them down and have been very open about it. And now one of the reasons, in my opinion, of putting misoprostol on the controlled substances list is now it has to be listed in the state prescription monitoring program. So every doctor who gives that to someone for, you know, miscarriage, for IUD, for hemorrhaging, the doctor's name and the patient's name are in a database. that is potentially one day available, depending on what's going on to the state, to law enforcement. Because think about it, they put opioids in there because they don't want people doctor shopping, to get multiple prescriptions. So all that information is in there, and this will be the same for misoprostol. Doctors are faced with, am I going to lose or hurt my patient? And also that's a potential medical malpractice claim. Or am I going to go to jail or lose my license? I mean, the doctor losing their license after one incident, like it's over. They can't help anyone out. They shouldn't be in those positions.
Loretto in Abita Springs. Good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Back to the Ten Commandments in schools. I had a thought a few days ago, and I thought, I think they know it's unconstitutional. They know it's a very money-wasting move just to make people say, oh, you're anti-religion or you're this or that. And why not just put the golden rule up?
Would that be a compromise, Mandy?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I tried to do that. I had an amendment that said, all right, we're going to put this. I mean, some of the Ten Commandments are fine for kids. Some aren't, like adultery. I said, let's do the golden rule. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. I mean, that's what little kids should learn. They should learn be nice to other people. Very basic. And frankly, most adults should too. And the author, maybe she's carrying it for someone, she said, well, I don't know where that comes from, and rejected it. And it's Jesus. It's a very basic tenet of, to me, Christianity. It's what I learned as a kid. And like 60-something Republicans voted against the golden rule. It just blew my mind. So I'm there with you. I think kids need to be taught that, frankly, but it just got shot down.
Paul, downtown Baton Rouge, please be concise. Paul, you're on.
Yes. am I wrong, but is people using contraception principles for abortion instead of abortion for medical practices? You know, the woman is in trouble. Isn't that where everybody got off base? Am I wrong?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I think he, like some people, believe abortion is appropriate for medical reasons and perhaps in the cases of rape or incest, but not for stopping a pregnancy that is unwanted for any number of reasons. That's a position held by many. And these pills allow it to be done with privacy without having to have a procedure. Now, for years, a lot of the pro-life crowd was saying that they wanted to get rid of these abortion mills. Well, there are not as many, it's a minority of procedures that actually take place because these pills act through the first trimester, if I'm correct. But your thoughts.
Right. So the thing about it is, and what's interesting too is I read a lot up and worked with Catholics for Choice. I'm Catholic, and the point there is you can't step into someone else's shoes. That's, you know, between them and their God, if, you know, what they believe in, or just their own soul. And I don't know what someone's going through, so maybe they weren't raped per se, but it's a bad relationship. There's domestic abuse. Maybe they have a couple children. Over half of all women who have elective abortions have children. So they know they might be real close to the poverty line, or they're already there, and they're really concerned that their last pregnancy might have been extremely difficult, and they're worried about leaving, you know, their child orphan. They might be 16 years old. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons that apply to people's lives, and birth control is just not 100%. Things happen, and I think we just shouldn't assume to know what someone is going through, and we should leave it. We should leave it to them. And this is not, you just, you know, pop a pill every month because you get pregnant. I mean, that's absurd. This is when your body is going through pregnancy, even the first few weeks, it is a very noticeable change, and it is not just, you know, taking a Tylenol.
Okay. A proposal that aims to let local and state police enforce federal immigration laws is, as reported today by the Advocate and Picayune, steps away from becoming law. Passed the House with 74 votes. Your thoughts?
I don't know how anything we ever do with regard to federal law is at all legal. Maybe. Immigration is a federal issue. We don't even have a border with another country. I didn't pay as much attention to that. I was busy with other bills, but I just don't know how it's something we could even enforce. And frankly, as many of us in hurricane-prone areas know, we are very dependent and thankful for immigrant workers who come here to help us out and stay and become members of our community. They came when we needed them, and they're very welcome. And New Orleans has zero problems with different immigrant communities, and they are very much part of our fabric. So I don't know what the state's trying to do with that besides what they call fear-mongering all the time.
Dan in Covington. Dan, please be brief. You're on with Representative Mandy Landry.
Hi, thank you. I'll try to be brief. With regard to the abortion ban issue, would it be possible to write the law such that the doctor basically has a responsibility to both patients before him, so that, or her, so that they have to do what's best for the mother and for the child?
Yep. All right. What about Dan's concern and his offering as far as a way to perhaps resolve this, if there is any?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the case as well, that the mother's life needs to come first. She's already a living, breathing human being. And can maybe have other children, but Right to Life groups will tell you that they think the opposite. They absolutely think that the fetus's life should come first. And I don't know how to combine those two views, but I agree with the caller that the person who's laying there on the table about to give birth, what is best for her should always come first.
Thank you, Representative Landry. We'll be calling again soon. And thank you for listening. Back next week, same time, same place. Stay safe and stay tuned.